League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Welcome to the Point Forward Podcast with the Milwaukee Journal Sentinels, J.R. Radcliffe and Jim Ozarski. An over-caffeinated Milwaukee Bucks conversation.
The Point Forward Podcast, Milwaukee Bucks chatter from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Merry Christmas, everybody. Hope you had a great holiday. The Milwaukee Bucks, not as much. Not a great Christmas anyway. They took one on the chin against the Boston Celtics on Christmas. A third consecutive loss on a pretty brutal road trip. Setbacks against the Brooklyn Nets before that. Cleveland Cavaliers before that. They did win in New Orleans to kick off the week, so a nice showing to start with. But we talked about this last week, that there's a chance they could lose a whole bunch of these, and I personally said I wasn't worried, but now that I've seen it, I don't know, maybe a little more worried. I'm not sure. My name is J.R. Radcliffe, and I'm joined in the studio today by Lori Nickel. Jim Ozarski is on the other line. He is still in Boston, having watched this Christmas Day game against the Celtics, two top teams in the Eastern Conference. And Boston ends up pulling away, winning kind of handily, 118. Wait, no, that's the Nets game. I've already forgotten the score of this game, Jim. But we're going to start. We're going to start with the game in Boston because that is the highlighted game. People in Wisconsin were happy. The Packers had just won, and then they turned on the Bucks, and the Bucks hung around, kept it close. But Boston was kind of in control that whole game. And Jim, I had asked sort of before this game what you would be looking for in this game and kind of what lessons you would be taking away, understanding the Bucks are in the middle of a tough road trip. They don't have Chris Middleton. Joe Ingles is still working his way back. They're not at peak performance right now, but Boston really did kind of handle them. So I guess just off the top, lessons you did take away from this game, if any, or if you feel like, you know, it's just not enough information because Chris Middleton isn't there. We know how much he is a bad matchup for the Boston Celtics. So how do you come away from this game? What evaluation do you take away from this game?
Yeah, it's well. First of all, you had the 118, right? They lost 139-118.
Oh shoot! Yes.
But Brooklyn did score 118 on them in that loss. So yeah, JR. It has to be more than just they're missing this one player, right? And Chris Middleton's an all-star, and sometimes that one guy can make a difference. I think. You know, Boston plays Giannis really well. You know, I think that was a takeaway. Look, Lori was there in Boston for that Eastern Conference semifinals when he essentially tried to will his team to victory and yet still couldn't do it.
Exactly.
And that's not a knock on Giannis. I think it's more of just how good Boston is at defending him. And, you know, look, he threw a shoulder into Jaylen Brown at the end of that game. You know, they can kind of frustrate him, you know, in a way that other teams just can't. And I think that highlights that Chris Middleton isn't there because they win a lot when he's not, right? And actually, JR, it's funny because, you know, way back at the beginning of the year when I thought they might start a little slowly, they're hitting that slow patch now. I mean, they've basically been a 500 team since that 9-0 start as they're trying to work through guys coming back from injury and new rotations, et cetera. So I think that was my biggest takeaway, though, was Boston, you know, gives Giannis fits, and this team still has to figure out a way to score enough when they don't. Cause I think they play decent enough defense. Jason Tatum finally was the difference in the third quarter, but Boston, you know, got to give them the respect as the defending Eastern Conference champions. They're still the best team in the East.
Lori, it's not just to me that they lost to Boston. That's going to happen. They're going to lose games to Brooklyn. They're going to lose to Cleveland. Stacking them up in a row, and I mean, they were competitive in the Cleveland game, but to end up kind of losing sort of all three in lopsided fashion, I do imagine there are people waking up just a little bit, not panicking, but just a little bit concerned that their Bucks are going to head into the new year not looking like a team that is the favorite to win the Eastern Conference. I mean, you could still argue they are, but Boston, so much clearly the better team. 139 points, like Jim said, which I believe is their season high. That's a bad omen. And like you said, it's more than just one player. So what is – you talked last week about how the shooting woes, the three-point shooting woes, were enough of a trend that you were concerned about that, especially on the road. We've absolutely seen that here. Nobody is shooting the ball well. So what is your takeaway from the Boston game and really the, you know, the road trip as a whole right now?
Well, the first thing I wanted to look at is why on earth is Giannis Antetokounmpo taking so many threes in this game? Now, first of all, I'm the biggest fan of his ugly three-pointer. I will defend that, meaning I will defend his right to take that and the need to take that all day long, probably at the angst of Jim Ozarski's opinion. But why was he doing it? You know, and the Celtics, even with the coaching change, have had this different philosophy of taking things away from him in the paint. He wasn't scoring well there, so it seemed like he was going outside. And I think we're starting to see now how much of a significance Giannis's contribution is to this team. And as he goes, they go, which is really fascinating to me because Drew Holiday played really well yesterday and Brooke Lopez played really well yesterday. They have enough people to make up for the loss of Chris Middleton. So it really does, it can't all be put on Giannis. He has to be allowed to be human in some of these games. And so to me, the biggest question is why are they shooting so poorly on the road? Why is there this dichotomy between home games and road games? And it's not that they're shooting great necessarily all the time at home either. This is uncharacteristic of a Mike Budenholzer coached team. His whole philosophy is keep shooting. If you're in a slump, keep shooting. He's done that in the past with Pat Connaughton. He's done that in the past with Drew Holiday on the championship playoff run in 2021. You will be benched if you don't keep shooting. He doesn't, you know, he feels the law of averages will work itself out. I think he even told that to Malika Andrews on TV yesterday, that they hope the percentages even out. So maybe this is just a bad stretch because I don't think they're going to change that offensive philosophy, and you guys can correct me if I'm wrong on that. It might just be that they're going through a rough stretch right now, and that happens in sports. But there's other things that concern me, too. And, you know, Pat Connaughton had some beautiful shots. I mean, he was open. He was there. But I don't know if it's the spin on his ball that's not working, if he isn't getting that shooter's touch right now. I have a lot of questions for them, and that's an issue. If Pat Connaughton can drain a three here and there, that really helps. But if you don't get these little contributions here and there, it's this cascading effect. So I have more questions, I think, than I do answers at this point.
Certainly Giannis was bottled up, like you guys have both said. 27 points, despite that, 9 rebounds against the Celtics. You know, I actually think, you go back a couple games, we scored 45 points. He was willing the team as best he could. He was on his game. And then it's the role players, like you're saying here. Nobody's shooting the ball. Nobody is really helping out. No one's rising up with Middleton off the floor. Jim, I look at that particularly in the Boston game. You know, you asked, how would they defend the, you know, if Boston is capable of hitting a bunch of threes, then maybe their three-point defense, the Bucks' three-point defense, isn't as further as far advanced compared to last season as we thought it might be at this point. And on the other side, the Bucks themselves, the role players, just they don't make threes. And we'll talk about Joe Ingles separately, but you know, Grayson Allen in particular, it seems like we saw more of what we saw in the playoffs. And Grayson Allen just doesn't work against Boston offensively or defensively. So I guess I'm seeing kind of it's alarming to me that guys aren't able to step up. That, you know, Pat Connaughton is still sort of seemingly shaking off the rust. That, you know, no one has sort of risen up. Javon Carter isn't as hot as he once was earlier in the year. Like, what about these guys? Are any of these guys of concern to you? You know, we're going to start talking about the trade deadline again, and Grayson Allen's name is going to come up. And especially when you look down the road at this potential matchup in the playoffs, you start to wonder, yeah, maybe this really is a guy that they have to move on from to get better for when they see Boston down the road. Just riff with me on some of those guys and what you're seeing and what you're thinking.
Yeah, this fits right into Lori's point. I mean, Pat Connaughton just played his 17th game, you know, but he's shooting 32% from three. Bobby Portis, his three-point percentage is cratered to 29%. That's not going to help. I mean, the double-doubles are great, him having more of an effect in the mid-range to the low post is great, but he can't shoot in the 20s, right? You know, Drew Holiday, 36%, that's fine. Javon Carter, 38% is fine. But again, his, you know, Grayson Allen, best three-point shooter on the team, with Brooke Lopez at 40, but you could argue his, you know, he's not shooting enough. And we asked him that post-game. I said, Grayson, you're putting up 2 threes a game over the last week and a half. And he said, yeah, that's not enough. You know, so I, some of it's maybe not enough threes. Some of it is they're not going in. And I don't know. And this goes back to, you know, this, I don't want to call it a scapegoating, but it's a little bit of, you know, Chris Middleton has dealt with this over the years, but Allen is sort of the target right now. Look, you're going to put him one-on-one against Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum, which happened in games. Is he going to win that matchup? Not most of the time. I don't think he's as bad defensively on this team as he's knocked for. But if he's not going to take 6-7 threes and make four, it does make you wonder, you know, where his fit is. So, yeah, I mean, he's the natural, again, we've talked about this a lot. He's the natural trade target just because of his skill set and how much money he makes. But again, I don't know if to Lori's point, I don't know if trading him for a defensive player solves their problems. That's assuming Chris Middleton is going to come back and be an all-star level player. We're getting close to 41 games missed. Like closer to four, half the season missed for Chris than a quarter of it. And so, like, I'm cool with assuming when Chris is back, he'll be averaging 20 points a game. But if you're John Horst, can you sit here and say, yep, that's what's going to happen. Let's trade Grayson Allen for whomever. And then all of a sudden you have one guy shooting 40% from three, and that's your center. You know, Brooke Lopez right now has the most threes taken on the team. I don't know if that's what they want. Right?
It's what I want. It's great content. Right. It's very good content. But yes.
So, yeah, it's – you mentioned the role players. Yeah, guess what? Derek White hit a big three. Grant Williams shockingly hit big threes.
That guy is so – he is so annoying to the Milwaukee Bucks. Right. My goodness.
Al Horford hit big threes. And look, this wasn't like last year. I think if you're a Bucks fan, you want to look for a silver lining. Yeah, the Celtics hit 15 threes. But it wasn't where they just sort of let one guy do it. Like the Celtics did it in a different way, off the bounce, off transition. Yes, there was the occasional open corner three, but over 48 minutes, like that's going to happen. I don't know how you answer the problem of, you know, the role players not hitting open shots. Like that's, to Lori's point, that's Mike Budenholzer hoping the percentages play out, which unfortunately for the Bucks haven't happened in the last three games they've played the Celtics.
Can I just tell you this little story? So Grayson Allen, you know, he's getting 27 minutes a game, and his locker is right next to Chris Middleton's locker here at home at Pfizer Forum. And I was picking Grayson Allen's brain about some other stuff and some stuff that I wanted to look up about game strategy. And I kind of teased him at the end. I'm like, okay, I'm going to do my homework, but just, you know, you can't be turning down those corner threes anymore. And Chris Middleton was changing and in his own world, and he turns around. He's like, that's exactly what I told him. I'm like, I was screaming to him from the bench, you cannot turn down those threes. They are encouraging him to put up more shots. And so I'm always curious about the mentality here. If you're a basketball purist or like an old school basketball person, it's kind of ingrained in you. If it's not your night, you don't keep shooting. If it's not going well, you pass the ball, you turn to other parts of your game, and that just doesn't work in this system that Budenholzer coaches, and it doesn't matter who the opponent is. And so I think it's more practical for the Bucks, instead of thinking about trading one of their best shooters on the team, to actually work on him, on his mentality development, and kind of shedding that college mentality, that old school mentality that you have to be perfect all the time. You may alter your shot. You may do the drive dunk that he did yesterday. That was pretty nice. You might have to do other things to get to the foul line. But they need to keep working on him, just like Chris Middleton was, maybe like a total team effort, and bring him along. They did that with Jrue Holiday a few years ago, like I mentioned earlier. And I think if they do that with Grayson, you know, it may not be perfect now, but it could pay dividends later.
Okay, you guys. Yeah, go ahead, Jim.
No, just quickly. I mean, Mike Budenholzer had some jokes pregame, and that was kind of one of them where we asked, hey, how do you get Grayson to shoot more threes? And he just looked and he said, I yell at him. And then he kind of laughed and was like, you know, he doesn't like it. But I think there was truth behind that.
Oh, for sure.
And Grayson even said, along with understanding him shooting three threes a game is not enough, where he's like, you know, I sit in these post games or in film breakups with associate head coach Charles Lee, and Charles will say, you should have shot that three. And Grace was like, okay, but I put it off the bounce, and then a teammate hit a three after that. So, like, he's like, it's not always a black and white thing, because he goes, I could take a three, and then Robert Williams blocks it. And then you're like, oh, he should have drove it. Or I drive it, and then I get caught up, and it's, oh, he should have took it. He's like, it's never – he's like, in the moment, it's never that clear cut as it appears after the fact, which I can appreciate, I can respect. And also thank him for having that conversation. But you're right, Lori. Like, this, you mentioned trading, and this goes back to things I said with JR. Like, this team is really in a rut offensively, and I still struggle with how do you trade a guy who's one of your better shooters. But I guess conversely, someone's listening to this, Lori and JR, and they're like, but he doesn't shoot it. So I get that, too. Like, if one of your best shooters is going to put it up, then what? Where is the value?
All right, you guys have brought up Chris Middleton, and I don't know exactly when we should start really raising a red flag on the injuries that he's dealt with this year. And
now,
well, I think we're probably past that point where there should be some pretty big concern here. Now, obviously, he gets hurt in the playoffs last year, but this is not an injury prone guy, at least not to this point in his career. You know, he's had injuries, he's missed time, but not significantly. And so I look at Giannis and see him playing almost every night, even though the Bucks know they're going to the playoffs and could stand to rest him more. Just as sort of an indicator to me, at least with Giannis, it's not that they're being ultra conservative. If they were, they could easily rest guys more often than they do. And so the fact that they have been so slow to bring Chris Middleton along, you know, we talked about sort of the first injury, and his father's death played into that. So that might be a completely separate thing. But to not have him now several games in a row tells me that this is a pretty significant thing. And I don't know behind the scenes, Jim or Lori, if you have a sense that it is as bad as it seems, or if it like is legitimately just, we are not taking chances because we are a playoff team and we are not going to waste Chris Middleton, you know, and take a risk with him in the middle of December because there are bigger fish to fry at the end of the year. And that might be. But this team needs, I would imagine after the new year, this team is going to want to, you know, be firing on all cylinders so that it is ready for, you know, the March, April, May, June corridor of the season. And I don't know when we're going to see Chris Middleton next. So Jim, I'll start with you, Jim, because you've been there on the road. Like, are you getting any sense of what's happening with Chris Middleton, when we might see him again, and how concerning this should be that he has only played in seven games to this point of the season?
Yeah, it's so I was able to catch up with Chris in Boston, and, you know, so I asked him, it's like, Chris, is this an acute injury? Like, and he said, it's something.
Oh, geez.
But he goes, it's, but he wouldn't, and I don't blame him for not saying it's ABC. You know, I don't think it's as specific as, you know, you sprain your MCL or your LCL or your patella move, because I feel like if that was the case, the Bucks would have just saved themselves a headache and said, Chris Middleton's out for 2 weeks. You know mm-hmm. what I mean?
Yes.
All he would say was, it's just some, he called it weird things that happen once he returned to play. And he's like, it's never happened to me in my career. There's some things that have happened, and I needed to take time for it to. And he said he had swelling.
And right. Look,
I mean, your body tells you, right. Yeah, if you swell, like, there's an injury in there. So he wasn't telling me what the injury was. So I was like, well, Chris, you hit the floor a lot, like in the Lakers game, in the Orlando game. He was on the floor. And he's like, and he didn't say that wasn't it. So I do wonder if he just, those first few games, got knocked around on the court. And the knee swelled up. Look, he hasn't had a right knee issue. I don't think, Lori, if you can remember, I mean, the right knee is what the problem was out of college, but that's a decade ago. So I don't know if this is just something, you know, 11 years in and he hit the floor a few times or banged knees a couple times and that's what it is. I mean, he admitted this is taking a little longer than he thought. But he insisted this was the right thing to do because he went 1-for-12 in that Memphis game. And he's like, I was hurting the team. I couldn't be out there anymore. Whereas the game before, Golden State, 6-for-13, 20 points, Bucks win. You know, so his debut against the Lakers, 6-for-11, 17 points, 7 assists. You know, Lakers had their best game of the season. So when he's been right, he's looked right.
Right.
But it's, you're right. I mean, it has to be a little concerning because it's a knee. And what, like, if he comes back, let's say, against Chicago, does he play 4 games? And is there, and that's what he said. He's like, I don't want this to happen again. And that's why it's taking the way he's like, when I come back again, he doesn't want to miss more time. But I don't know if you can necessarily predict that.
Do we know? Do you know exactly? We know it's the knee, but we don't know, like, if it's a bone spur or, a kneecap that's tracking wrong. Or, like, I'm trying to think of all the things that would cause swelling that would be chronic that you would have to nurse through either until you can rest in the off season or it requires surgery. Do we know the specifics?
No, he okay. Refused. I tried my best to pry, and of course the Bucks, that is not something that they
no. Like, it's a lower body disclose. Injury, right?
So like Chris is the only one, like, I mean, this is why he subscribed to the Journal Sentinel. I mean, our place is the only place he's talked to about this.
Good job.
And so at this point, you know, like, see, he, you know, he hasn't disclosed it, and you know, the sources, in all caps, aren't at a point where they want to send that out to their various people as well. So no worry, at this point, we don't know exactly what it is.
Yeah, good get on your part. You know, Chris talks. He usually talks. I mean, I've never had him kind of shy away from that. So to me, now I'm a little even more worried about how he can return and to what level he can play.
At some point, this is going to set the table for his contract situation. Mm-hmm. You know, next year he's got a player option, $40 million. I don't know where we thought that was going to go before the season. I guess in my head, probably declines it and sees what's out there. And maybe he comes right back to Milwaukee. I know it seems like he'd love to stay. And the Bucks, obviously, he's a 3-time All-Star, and he's been very good to this franchise. And again, I would not classify him as injury-prone before the season. But now I don't know. You know, does he, coming off what's going – are we headed toward a down year for him? You know, kind of, I think, at this point. So does he take the player option? Do they discuss an extension? Like, I don't know what happens if the Bucks have their druthers. Do they move on from Chris Middleton? Because he's going to be 32 years old next year, and they maybe want to work something else out. I mean, I know it's probably too early to have this conversation, but I don't know. What do you think of that, Lori? Have you given that any thought yet?
I can't imagine the pillars, the cornerstones of this franchise right now, not being together with Middleton and Antetokounmpo. They complement each other so much. And when they play together, it makes their lives easier. They both know that. They've talked about it. It's been so long. So we just look at the character, the way Chris Middleton carries himself. You know, he's made a significant amount of money. I'm one of those people who hates talking about contract stuff, now, you know, when it's not. But I understand that that's such a big point of it. So, but my excuse is I have not used this to press him on his thoughts about that because I feel like we just went through all this recently.
With Giannis.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. Right.
But also, you know, Chris, you know, he's very conscientious a lot, like with the team chemistry and playing here and playing for purpose, playing for championships, not playing for paycheck and all that kind of stuff.
Jim, we saw the return of Joe Ingles here this week, and he did not need a night off. He's already played in it's four games now. He has not looked good, and we thought, I mean, you know, he's 31 years old coming off of an ACL reconstruction. Of course, there was going to be some rust after a 10-month recovery period. He's back much earlier than I think a lot of people would imagine. And, you know, we're talking 3 of 17. Like, this isn't a high volume that we're dealing with, but he has not made shots. On the other hand, he has gotten good looks. Like and I feel like when he's out there, the whole team gets good three-point looks. They're just not going down right now, which is a bummer at the moment, but could ultimately prove to be a good thing, and they're going to start falling eventually. So give me just what you've seen from Joe Ingles so far, how you feel about his performance, and I'm guessing you'd attribute what you've seen thus far to, you know, to just that post-ACL return rust.
Yeah, well, first of all, Joe Ingles is going to love you because you just made him 4 years younger than he is.
What did I say he was?
He's 35, not 31.
When did I say he was 31? Did I just say he was 31 years old? I'm thinking of Chris Middleton was 31 years old.
You're my new best friend.
Yeah. It's interesting. He played about 20 minutes against the Celtics. Mike Budenholzer said after the game that Joe went to him and was like, hey, I'd like to play a little more than what my minutes restriction is. And the Bucks greenlit him for that. Finally hit some two threes, fouled on a three-pointer, made all three of his free throws. So when he sat with me before he came back in his Joe Ingles way, was like, oh, there's going to be times I look like bleep. Like he's like, I've never played basketball with these guys. I had no camp. I haven't touched them, like played any of this in 11 months, whatever it is. He knew this wasn't going to look great at the start. And he sort of admitted again yesterday that it hasn't looked the best. But he feels what he says is my knees feel great. Plural, like the other one being, you know, older, the other one being newer. And, you know, he likes the fact that he's been able to hold up a little bit defensively. There's been moments he's, you know, been switched up on much smaller players. He did say, JR, you mentioned that the shooting percentage, those first couple of games, New Orleans, Cleveland, he felt like he couldn't jump. So he's like, I shot some threes that I had no legs. He's like, I was so gassed, you know, just like the return to basketball condition. And I think that's part of this. Like we go back to like the Pat Connaughton conversation. They've played 32. Pat Connaughton's played only 17 games. Like his minutes restriction was lifted relatively recently. And so even, you know, Connaughton, Giannis said this yesterday that yes, we're a veteran team. Yes, we've been together, but we don't practice. So it's the practice stuff with this team. You see it in games. And that's like with Joe Ingles, be it turnovers, be it a pick and roll that's not quite smooth. You know, maybe he's not in the spot that someone thinks he should be in because they just don't know. So I think, I don't know, I think Ingles is going to be fine. I think it's encouraging that he finally hit a couple shots. You're right, JR, that he had, like, Joe Ingles shouldn't have wide open threes. Like, that's, to me, like, that's a bad play for a defense. So, again, if you're looking for encouraging things over the last four games, three of which the Bucks have lost, it would be moments like that where that guy is alone in the corner. Like the Bucks will take that all day if he sort of, again, to Lawyer's point, reverts to the average, which is a 41% three-point shooter. So I think it's all encouraging things. It's just, look, The other side of it is George Hill hasn't played in five games. I'm sure Bucks fans aren't upset about that. Wesley Matthews' minutes have been cut.
Right.
You know, Jordan Wara has disappeared. Marshawn Beauchamp, you know, doesn't really play when the roster's together. So, like, there's a cascading effect of minutes, which I also think Mike Boonehoser is trying to figure out who plays with whom and when. And that's we're just seeing it in real time.
That's actually something I wanted to ask you guys. I'm wondering this, too, about Budenholzer and his staff. Is he going to, and do you think he should, lean towards the older veteran guys? Or, and I know they're not interchangeable, but Ingles and or Beauchamp, who do you go with? Who do you, since you're, you know, indoctrinating these new players, whether they're new to the team or new to the league, do you bring along a young guy like Beauchamp, or do you go with the veteran guy? And for the dynamics, for the energy, for the spark, for the enthusiasm, for the defensive ability, what do you guys do? To me, I like Beauchamp on the floor more because of what Budenholzer liked from him defensively early on. And you live with whatever growing pains he has to go through. But that's more of a question. I'm not advocating it. What do you guys think about the youth potential and going with the younger side of the bench as opposed to staying with these tried and true veterans throughout everything?
What do you think, Jim? Because I don't know if it's an either or situation, but you know, I think Joe Ingles was signed to be part of a championship run, so I imagine that they're going to defer to him whenever possible. What do you think, Jim?
Yeah, I this isn't what Bucks fans want to hear, because I definitely see them and hear them shouting from the rooftops about Marjon Beauchamp is better than every other veteran that's on the team, apparently. and that just sounds like
we know, fans
quarterback
know
stuff. Yeah, like I get the idea and the thought of the rookie, right, who has started a few games and has made some of his corner threes, and has worked on that shot. But that's just not the Bucks. They're not. I think we've seen enough of Jordan Ward to know that for all the hate that Grayson Allen gets on defense, like, Jordan Ward is not as good as Grayson on defense. So now Jordan's going to put up the shots, which also is, I think, one of the reasons he hasn't quite cracked the rotation. I don't know if after all these years he's earned the trust of Mike Boonehoser. I think the fact that he hasn't played at all in the last week or so just sort of cements that. Beauchamp's a little more interesting because I think they believe he has a high defensive ceiling. But again, defense really isn't the problem. And so, okay, a Bucks fan will shout at me, Beauchamp's making 36% of his threes. That's better than six other players. And that's true at this point. So to Lori's, the question then is, it is an either or in the sense of the minutes. So you just signed Joe Ingles and he's got to come back from injury. So he has to play. He has to, like, literally has to play, because again, the way the schedule is set up, they can't practice. So, okay, Joe Ingles, you just came back from surgery. We're paying you $7 million and you're going to play 12 minutes a game right now. We might need you for 20 in the playoff, but right now, because we want to play the kid. Or Pat Connaughton. Pat Connaughton's minutes have declined to 20. He's usually a 27-minute a game guy. So, and Beauchamp can't play over Bobby. Like, Bobby's the third big. Beauchamp can't play over Javon Carter, because as much as you might like Beauchamp's defense, he's probably still too big to guard Donovan Mitchell and Darius Garth, right? So there's, like, big 3-and-D wings are in vogue, and it's great, but it's not just as simple as, you know, he should be the backup point guard over Drew Holiday because he can play defense and maybe give Zion Williamson fit. So it is. Lori's right. Like, I don't think it's as simple as play this kid, don't play this person. Maybe that's the benefit of having what Budenholzer continues to call a good roster. And I guess it's up to him as a coach to figure out, again, who fits with whom and where. And the problem is, again, they have to do it in real time.
I do want to sneak into what's making Jim mad before we go here. But one last thought for both you guys. You know, last Monday, they play the Pelicans. They pull away 128-119. You know, they weather the storm from Jonas Valanciunas's first team All NBA performance, and I think a team that was giving them their best shot, and the Bucks won. And I think I even tweeted this. Damn, this team is special. They are a special basketball team, and I meant it. And I still mean it. But if the goal here is to be the best team in the Eastern Conference, I think, you know, for the first time, I don't know if I believe that's true. And they could get there. Chris Middleton could be the one ingredient that's missing, but I don't know if I believe that, like we've talked about at the beginning. So just from both of you guys, how concerned are you if the goal here is to get to the NBA Finals? Do you, you know, if you're looking at this, do you feel like maybe the Bucks aren't going to be the team to do that? You know, like how red flaggy are the last three games? I'll start with you, Lori. Just where are you at overall? I know we've kind of touched on all that, but like how concerned should we be?
It's no red flags right now, but definitely what's the next flag? The warning, the
yellow, some, I guess.
Yes, yellow, because it's still December and the talent is here. The shooting is something that can be worked on and can be figured out and can improve. I do have questions about the Bucks' defense, though. And I do think that, you know, they're still 22-11. And, you know, they padded their schedule, their record based on all those home games in November. So I don't think there's anything of a concern as the team. To me, Middleton is a really, really big concern. And just not knowing exactly what's going on with him. So I think there's still time. I think, you know, they went through a 5-game losing streak before and came back. I saw your story, Jim, about Giannis calling for a better sense of urgency as far as their starts, you know, the first quarter, sort of that. So there's still plenty of time to work on this. This isn't early March. So I don't think people need to panic yet.
All right, Jim, are you panicking?
Definitely.
No, I mean,
he's
panicking. Yeah. I think still I am going to have to be one of those folks who's I want to see what happens with Chris. Like if he misses another week, then I think that changes the trade deadline calculus a little bit for John Horst, because it's like, is he missing a week to be back for 40 games? Or is it like, wow, this, you know, their medical staff says, you know what, this is going to be a problem. Like he's going to have to play two of every four or be on some sort of weird minutes thing. Or is he back against Chicago? Or maybe they wait till December 30th against Minnesota when they have three home games in a row. And then he'd be off that second of the back-to-back in Toronto, home against Charlotte, and that sort of jump-starts it. You know, so no, it's still too early for any sort of panic in that regard. But the Chris thing is what I'm watching most. And I think that sets a course, if that makes sense, for what'll happen in January, February with any potential roster changes.
Bucks will be back home on the 30th, like you mentioned, against the Timberwolves. First, they go to Chicago to close down this 5-game road trip, but they get to come home here for a couple days, not playing again until Wednesday night. It's the Timberwolves on the 30th, and then, like you said, back-to-back against the Wizards, one on New Year's Day. That's 7 o'clock tip at Pfizer Forum, and then again, 2 days later, January 3rd. All right, let's have some fun, close it down with one of my favorite segments. It is What's Making Jim Mad?
I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!
I am very disappointed.
I'm upset.
Louder! I'm upset. Say it louder!
I'm upset.
That's my secret, Cat. I'm always angry.
What's making Jim mad?
Jim, you're out there on the road. No. Bound to be something that makes you mad.
There are so many things that have made me mad on the road. but I wanted to save this one for when Lori was with us because it's just so absurd, and I'm curious her point of view. You know what makes me mad? Blue pens.
Blue pens.
I don't want to see a blue pen. I don't want to see anything written in blue pen.
Everything's written in blue pen.
Our Journal Sentinel staff is so great. Like, they keep us, like, we get our notepads and we get whatever we need. Like, when stuff happens, you know, we run out of, like, when I go into the, like, I'm running and I'm going to go buy my own pens if all we have left is black pens or blue pens. And I think other people hate blue pens because why are there so many blue pens? Like, it is one of those weird, it's one of those weird things in this profession where I don't want to see them. I don't want them as an option. I don't like writing with them. I don't like reading anything written in blue pen. And I do think other people feel this way.
Really?
Because there's always so many blue pens. Because I don't know. I don't know how Lori feels about a blue pen, but they make me mad. I don't want to see them. I don't want to have them. I don't want to write with them. I don't want to read anything written in blue pen. I'd rather read something in red pen.
I enjoy red pen. This is definitely not something I anticipated there being a community for. The blue pen thing seems very normal to me. Lori just showed me her notebook. Lots of blue pen scribble in there. Some black pen, too.
Right.
Some black pen, too. Which,
any pen. I'm good with any.
Do you feel this way about all multicolored? Like you would, orange pen would not be your thing, right, Jim? Like, you're just black pen. That's what we're talking about here.
I'm just black pen.
Interesting. Yeah.
It's, this was something that I have felt this like distaste for the blue pen for a long time. And then it mushroomed, it boiled over a few weeks ago when, I ran out of black pens and I came in, I was looking and it was just this box of blue pens. That's all there was left. I think boxes plural. And it made me really angry about it. And I thought, you know what? Is this irrational?
And then yes. Yes, it is.
No, it wasn't.
The answer
because
is
then
yes.
I said, no. I said to myself, wait a minute. Why are there only blue pens in here? All the black pens are gone. Clearly, other people don't want these. So this is my shout out to no, we don't want blue pens anymore. I'm saying it.
It might don't be time. Those. If you're this upset about it, you might just need to make your investment into your preferred pen. I'm just going to be real with you right now.
Admittedly, I did not.
I had,
Jim.
So many travel ones. I've been on the road like 9 days.
I don't know
what day it is.
I have some hotel pens of yours right now that you lent to me.
You know, but for whatever reason, it was just that struck me. And Lori was in for this one. So I had to ask because, you could like a blue pen. I think that's wrong, though.
We've got work to do on you, but we'll do that off.
Yeah, I think Lori is saying she's fine with the blue pen thing. Wild. Did not know that was a thing that people would notice or feel too concerned about. I personally wonder how long we even have pens in schools. Like, I mean, at some point, the only way people are going to communicate is over digital formatting. So we're fortunate that there is even handwriting anymore. Jim Bozarski, not a fan of blue pens. Don't bring that blue pen up around here.
Don't.
Can
ask for my autograph in a blue pen. It's not going to happen.
You can read his type, which is definitely black letters all over the Journal Sentinel, jsonline.com. He again will be following this team, Chicago, on Wednesday and then back home for a 3-game set. Jim, thank you for joining us, man. We will chat with you again very soon.
All right. Sounds good. Happy holidays, everybody.
And Lori, thank you for joining me.
Thank you for letting me be here.
Absolutely. As always. And the Point Forward podcast can be found in all the typical locations, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, whatever your thing is. And feel free to tell people about us. You can find, again, jsonline.com. You can find our Bucks newsletter and all sorts of goodies. Thank you for tuning in, everybody. We will chat with you again real soon. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to the Point Forward podcast, a Milwaukee Journal Sentinel and jsonline.com production.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.